Okay, so the last couple weeks, I don't even know how many, it might be three already. The last couple weeks plus, we have been, and then please close the doors then. The last couple weeks plus, we've been discussing the question of why it was it that when Esther was chosen and snatched to become the queen of Persia, married to the king, Mordechai, who had an in with her, didn't decide to take full advantage and announce that she's Jewish and take all the perks that come along with it. That was the question we had. C, RabbiHuffman.com, Spotify. Like last week, I said about the mayor of New York City as a random example, Hunter Biden, 100%. But the reality is that most people in power, the neighbors and friends, take advantage and show up. That's just the way the world is, the human nature. And here, Mordechai did the opposite. Mordechai told Esther, be quiet about the situation. And we said already a couple different approaches, and tonight we're going to have a fundamental approach that I saw brought down. And this one, we're actually going to do something we have never done in this class, as far as I know. Maybe you'll correct me, Charles, that we've never done this. We're actually going to read, I'm going to read something, an interpretation on something, then we'll bring it back. So the pasuk in Devarim, Perek Beis, pasuk Gimel, 2, 3, chapter 2, verse 3, is the middle of Moshe Rabbeinu's epic, final, long, long speech, his goodbye speech, his instructions of the future of the Jewish nation that starts Deuteronomy that goes on for a while. And each word is golden. We have it today. Each word's golden. The greatest speech ever given. And he says like this. He was describing a lot of the events that had happened in the past 40 years as they travel the desert. And he says, we turned and journeyed to the wilderness toward the Sea of Reeds as Hashem spoke to me, and we circled Mount Seir for many days. Then Hashem said to me, this is a famous thing, they didn't go straight into Israel when they were traveling through the desert. They made that reverse L, which took 40 years instead of just going straight in. Then Hashem said to us, saying, enough of your circling this mountain, turn yourselves northward. So the Jews were coming from west to east, from Egypt, bottom of Israel. They're going, going, going. Instead of just going straight up, they're like going around the border. And then at one point, God says, okay, now go north. They went around north, and that's how they went in. They made that, now not reverse L, reverse C, I guess. Reverse C. Okay, that's what they did. And it's just a simple, when we read it, it's just a simple history lesson. But as we know, this is golden real estate. Every word must be analyzed to the billionth degree because it means a gazillion dollars. So here we're going to quote one of the all-time great passages, something I've said many times. We're all born ignorant people. Everyone. When you're born, you know nothing. And you, most people pass away, they still know nothing. And that's okay. But certain things you have to, you can't get to 120 and not know it. This Kli Yakar, 1600s Prague, late 1500s actually, then into the 1600s Prague, has an interpretation, or the name of Lenchitz, has an interpretation. He has grandchildren today. Len, L-E-N, I don't know if it's C-H or S-H, I-T-Z, U-T-Z. Yeah, it depends how you say it exactly. And now he has relatives alive today that can trace men, and not women also, but men. Yes. Whose name is
Lenchitz,
Lenchitz?
so you're living Kensington, you should know them. Yeah.
Oh, he lives against it. He's my neighbor. They're direct. We're going now to Prague. He died in the early 1600s. We're going back a long time. That's 400 years. They can trace the name down. And he has a master interpretation that was printed on most.
And that's called the Kli Yakar.
The name of his book is called the Kli Yakar, like the expensive vessel. And he wrote other books also. He wrote a few things. And he wrote this interpretation that got published in most of the famous Chumashim that was printed. And here we're going to read it because look how he starts out this idea. And the words he's going on, where it says, enough of your circling this mountain, enough of your circling this mountain. It sounds easy. Turn northward. Doesn't sound like we're about to hit all-time great concept. But he opens the door for one of the secret passages. And this is what he says. Rav, I don't know if Asfar even has it in English. We're going to do the Hebrew anyway, and then the English. I'm going to read it both ways. Rav, he says this. Rabbim Oimrim, he says, many people say, interesting phrase, many people say, he puts it there, this verse I just read to you, Noikev v'yoyrid aratahoyim. It sinks into the depth of the depth. A simple wording. Enough of your circling this mountain, turn yourself northward. He says, people tell us that this is the depth of the depth. Sinks into it. Remez, yes, by remez. It has a hint. It has a hint. Le Shaita Ladaris talks about what happened then. Let's make it a little bigger. It talks about what happened then, but it also is a futuristic concept. The Inyan sub of Zeh, what does it mean to encircle? What do you mean, dude, enough of your circling. What does a circling refer to? So we just said circling means, instead of going like this, we're going straight and up. Now, is that really called a circle? You could be a baby and say, that's not the classic what's called circling. We are, we're going around the border of Israel proper. So he says, what does it mean? But Inyan Zeh, sheyelchu schar schar, lekerem Hashem tzavachis. They should circle around in God's garden. But they won't get too close. Kiyomim rabim sheyisrael sheyu nadim v'nam. Some of it, but you can Yisrael koyachaleim. The Jews are going to be circling, means be in the long exile. When the word says enough of your circling, it's not referring to the Jews in the desert going west to east and not going direct into Israel, but it's referring to the circling men of the Jews who are circling forever in the garden that we live in now of what we call the exile. So that's what this pasuk is telling us. It's not finished with this. That means that we're going to be circling the whole time until the Mashiach comes. That's what he writes. Until the Mashiach comes. Yeah, I'm skipping some of the words here because that's on a game. And when he says, and the Jews are circling, I skipped four lines here. What is the answer? How do you survive a long exile? What you do is you turn yourself northward. You turn yourself northward. Suffering. He says, what does it mean? They explain this, that it means the word suffering, although correctly also means north, the word suffering means also hidden. It's spinu, hide. In the Gia Shaita Shalesa, when Esav, Edom, the exile we live in now, if they're on doing well, it's spinu asbachem, hide yourselves. The Indian Atzvan is nearly, he says, what does it mean to hide? Explains, Shem Yematza Ish Yisrael Eiz Atzlacha. If a person becomes monetarily successful, he doesn't say monetarily. If a person becomes successful and he has a little money, Zir Sham, Azai Yamtinu Yamtinu Akol B'Esav. Hide it and don't let the Esav, the Edom nation that were in their Golas, know about it. There's no nation, Shemiskanus B'Yisrael, that jealous of the Jews. Kemoy Esav. Esav is the most jealous of all of us. Why? Because he believes that we stole his blessing. Says it openly. He says this, like he says that we believe that. And therefore, he says that we came into secrecy. And he adds to a pasuk here, when he quotes Yaakov, again with Esav, Yaakov says a fascinating thing. When the Shvatim of Yosef was in Egypt, beginning of chapter 42, in Parshas Miketz, Yaakov perceived that there were provisions in Egypt. So Yaakov told the sons, why do you make yourselves conspicuous? Lama Tisro. Let me see if Oscar quotes it here. Hold on. Oscar says, why do you show yourselves as having plenty to eat? Such behavior will lead to the envy and ill will on the part of the families of Yishmael and Esau. Quotes of Gemara and Tainus. Do not travel with food in your hands. He gives a speech here. Now, the interesting thing is, the Kli Yakar is quoting this pasuk. The Yaakov told the tribes, do not look yourself chashev in the eyes of Yishmael and Esau. Hold on. And that's what Rashi says. So he's saying the same thing. Why do you pick on these nations? Why do you pick on Esav? Where were they living at this point in time? They're living in Canaan. The Ramban asked on Rashi, why did you pick those two nations? You should have said, the Philistines, the Canaanites. They're right there. Don't look great. This is the Ramban asked on Rashi. The Gemara again says, I'm quoting, why do you show yourselves as having plenty? Will lead to envy and ill will part on the families of Yishmael and Esav. And the Ramban says, it's on the Gemara, really. The Ramban says, I understand, that's a weird choice of people. Normally you'd say, don't make the guy next to me jealous. You know what happens? You build a nice house, you build a nice house, the guy next to you is upset you build a nice house. The guy in Texas is not thinking about your nice house. So why are we picking Yishmael and Esav? The Kli Yakar's answering, we'll get to the second. Kli Yakar's answering, because they have a tendency to be jealous to us. The reason why is because Esav is convinced that we stole everything from him. So he's always looking to see if the Jews are building nice houses. Hold on. We got to do the next one. I'm still back now. I'm back to the Kli Yakar, who just quoted this pasuk, and he says like this: "This is unbelievable words." Because he says that Yitzchak and Yishmael hold, Ishmael holds that Yitzchak stole from Abraham Yishmael's inheritance, and Esav holds that Yaakov stole it. Therefore, they're both no good. Therefore, they're both going to be jealous. You have to be careful of those two specific nations. That's why what he said on Moshe Rabbeinu saying, "Go northward." Northward means Shalish Kanabachem. Hide yourself that they shouldn't be jealous of you. Now here goes the speech in the 1600s. I don't know when he wrote this. late 1500s, early 1600s. That's what it is. B'zeh hepach imash Yisrael oisim b'daras halal. This is the opposite of how Jews act today. The Eretz Aveim, when they live in the foreign nations. Kimi sheyesh lemana, it's a phrase, whoever has $100, what does he have? The end of the phrase is he needs $200. It says no. Whoever has $100, mara atzmai, he makes himself appear in fancy clothing and a gorgeous house that's full of fancy stuff as if he's a multimillionaire. He's right. 1600s, how nice are those houses? And they violate these instructions to Moshe Rabbeinu that says, go northward, meaning hide yourself. And this custom creates animosity among the other nations. And he ends over the word. This is the reason why we are circling all of these years in the exile. And the wise people know this, and they take Musa. Unbelievable Kliyaka. The Musa speech of the decade that he says began, not with Moshe Rabbeinu, began with Yaakov, telling everyone, Jews, the non-Jewish nations, we'll discuss your answer in a second, that feel that they're jealous of the Jews because we stole their blessings. And when we're downtrodden, they're not necessarily jealous of us. They might ignore us. But as we build up might, both monetarily and potentially as an army, is when the jealousy...
Influential
politically. I would venture to say, not getting into politics, that one of the reasons why, Stephen, on even, that in 1948, the world didn't have a problem with the state of Israel, is at that moment in time, downtrodden would be a positive to be said on the Jewish. We reached the downtrodden. We were four steps under that, right? We weren't like, you know, there's poor and then there's really poor. There's like downtrodden and then we were in 1948. And miraculously, whether you believe in the state of Israel or not, you agree it's a miracle. Both the Russians and Americans agreed for a short time. Agreed on a numero uno, make the state of Israel. And then at that time, of course, the Arabs hated us, but the rest of the world wasn't so openly anti the state of Israel. Then 1967 comes along, and for a few weeks after the war, all the Jews unite. But then people like the underdog. We're less of the underdog. 73, we took a beating, but we're less of the underdog. And as the year, we have the picture of us holding a tank, them throwing a rock. So there becomes a thing everyone's aware of. I'm not saying they're psychologically aware of this, but the Kliyakar, and according to Yaakov Moshe, it says that this arousal of hatred begins with them. And I saw, just Steve wants to say something, and I saw that someone to answer that was Mordechai's reasoning behind telling Esther to be quiet. Because as I did not say, but Chastel said, I was talking about monetary wealth, and he right away said political influence. I don't know if you were thinking of this, Mordechai. No, you weren't. You were just subconsciously. So Mordechai is turning to Esther and saying, listen, we're at the end of the exile here, as we've discussed the last couple of weeks. They all knew there was a 70-year limitation on that exile. The question was when it began. Belshazzar had his reason, made a party, failed. Ahasuerus made his reason, party failed. But Mordechai, they all knew, we're at the end here. We're not that far away. But as the Kliyaka says, there's a way that we have, when we circle and we continuously stay in exile, we continuously circle the mountain and we don't get into the mountain and we don't get into the base of Mikdash and we're only on the outside. And that comes from when? When we're not hiding ourselves in the north. We're not hiding ourselves. As he says the last words, this is the reason for the lengthy galus. All the torturous that we find ourselves in, because we are delaying it and causing these issues because we're showing off. So Mordechai said to himself, you know what? We got an issue here. The moment I'm going to tell you to take over, that problem begins ASAP. ASAP. And we have to stay hidden. Now, once we're forced out, the end of the story of the Megillah, and we're building a second base of Migdash, so technically, just in case Chaskel was about to ask that, wait, what about the end of the Megillah? At the time when Esther announces herself, technically,
you mean forced out. The conditions were right that it was time to reveal herself.
Right.
Conditions.
I mean, yeah.
The conditions were right that she revealed her ethnicity.
Correct. I meant forced, but the conditions are the force, no?
Okay.
And when she was at, when the conditions created this situation where now we're going to create this now public concept of us being a Jews, at that point, guess what? The exile is sort of ended. Because right after that is when we begin to build the second temple. So this idea that we have is while we're in exile, hide yourselves, go north, which doesn't mean go north, it means hide yourselves. So that I saw the answer brought down that one of the reasons, and we have many so far the last few weeks, one of the reasons why Mordechai was screaming, not screaming, bad phrase, advising Esther, keep a low profile, don't say you're a Jew, was because of the, what did you just say, political, what did you use now? At that shame. Influence. The political influence that was going on. That would be another good answer. An answer why Mordechai knew this whole concept, because we're saying Moshe Rabbeinu said, it's clear up in the 1600s, but it's not far to say that what was printed in the 1600s, Mordechai had Tzadik knew already, and Mordechai knew the instructions from Moshe Rabbeinu. Mordechai knew the instructions from Yaakov Avinu, and therefore Mordechai was telling her, do not publicly show influence. And it would even be worse, because if Mordechai would have had the self-control to refrain from taking advantage of the building codes, taking advantage of not paying a parking ticket ever, do you think it's possible that all the Jews who knew Esther was in the palace, we have a Jewess as the queen, would not have tried to take some advantage of it on their local, you know, hey, you move your car, I got the queen, you can't do nothing to me. Not a foreign concept that most people would say. And Mordechai realized that's not the way. That's not the good idea. Don't create more jealousy. Don't have us stuck in this situation longer. The 70 years are on the clock. We're about to get out of it. Let's not mess things up. Because even though we said it, we spoke about it a couple weeks ago, even though there were certain triggers, it's possible they could have messed it up. I don't know. I don't know how it works. If they would have all intermarried, I don't know. Maybe they would have got redeemed. Just like in Egypt, someone said this 2 weeks ago, it was Bodenheim. Just like in Egypt, even though there was a clock that said, pick a number, 400 years, 430 years, whatever it is, had the Jews reached, according to the Zohar Kodesh, had the Jews reached the level of the 50th level of contamination, there was no getting out. So that means there is a way, even though there's some guaranteed, you can look at it in two ways. There is triggers that make you say this. Maybe I've got to take it early. But that means that Mordechai was saying, let's not place ourselves in that position. That will be for tonight. Answer number one. What do you want to say just as a standalone, maybe cut out? What is your answer on the Ramban's question? The Ramban, again, we're going to repeat the question asked. That why does the Talmud / Rashi say that Yaakov was saying, don't show off to Yishmael and Esav, those two nations? They not necessarily were the ones living right there. The Canaanites, I'm adding on the Philistines. Ramban, I think, doesn't say Philistines. I remember correctly, it says Canaanites. They were not living there at the time, so that's not the one you're afraid to get jealous of. The Kliyukers answer, there are many, about a different approach. The Kliyukers, it's, you know, tucked away over here, says, by the way, you want to answer over there? I'll tell you why. Because these are the naturally inclination that they're going to have jealousy toward us because they believe we stole their blessings.
And
new answer now
is because, and they're the ones that were related to us. They're literally either
very similar, yes,
brothers or cousins.
Excellent.
And you hate the ones you're related to, the ones you're closest to, you hate them most,
and you get jealous of quicker.
You get jealous of them. Excellent. Most. That's why some spike.
You're saying with the Kliyukah a little less, you're saying you don't need to come onto the stolen blessing. You have to come onto the fact that brothers in general are jealous. Yes. Years ago, this is in chain of thought. It was a Tuesday night class from decades ago. So if you remember, you might remember from chain of thought, you might remember from decades ago. Stephen was here then. It was early classes, because chain of thought was from some of those early classes. And there is a phrase in Parshas Mishpatim, I'll put this all in the bottom, but you know, when you link to them. And it says, Loi Tia Kenosha. What it means is, in English, when you lend money to someone, don't be like a forceful person, which means if the guy does not have money, if he has the money, you can be. That's what we discussed then in the laws of charity, laws of loaning. Mom, if one of the first couple years I was here, if a guy has the money, you're allowed to put pressure on him. Pressurize. I don't know what the word was. Don't be a pressure person. But if the guy has no money and he borrowed the money, then don't put the pressure on him to pay you back, because in the end, you can't do it. And the phrase of and the example given is, Talmud says, don't even walk by him in shul. If you normally sit on the left side of the shul and he sits on the right side, don't purposely take a walk by him like, hey, look at me, remember I exist. Because that's putting pressure on a guy who, again, legitimately does not have it. We spoke about that was the laws then. It has to be legitimate then. Guy's a bum, go after the guy. Now, the question asked, because the Talmud, the Pasuk quotes the words, Loitia, do not be kinosha, like a pressurized person. So the question the early commentators asked, what do you mean don't be like a pressurized person? Don't be a pressurized person. Now, again, the Talmud might be answering without answering it. Like means not that I come up to you and say, give me my money. It means walking by the guy and mumbling, money, or even less than that, you're walking by the guy and saying, nice suit. But you got that suit. You know, when the guy borrows your money, he buys a new suit. You're not a happy man. And that, now, so the Talmud is even saying less. Don't be like it means, obviously, if you're openly saying it, of course, that's the law. The Talmud's saying, learn from the kid. Doesn't say it openly. That's what it means. Learn from the like means even manipulative moves. Don't do manipulative moves. Okay? That was the commentary by the early commentators. What we quoted, if I remember correctly, the Shulev Diskin, chief rabbi of Jerusalem about 100 years ago, he says like this. The Loisi Kenosha is not even talk. It doesn't mean the first answer I gave is talking about a guy who loaned money, but he's saying that the lender should not act in a certain way and don't do a fake act. He says nothing to do with loans at all. Not a loan. Don't put pressure on people and is going on the loan. The like pressure is when it's not a loan. And he talks about there. Can't imagine what it looked like 100 years ago in Jerusalem. Third world country, no running water, no bathrooms inside the houses. He says what it means is don't act a certain way if you know it puts pressure on the person next to you. So, and the example given in train of thought, I think, is when you build a nice house, well, I earn the right to have my money. I have the right to live the way I want to live. Yes, but understand that you're now putting pressure on the guy next to you. And that type of pressure, the terrorist telling us, don't do that either. Pressure doesn't mean only when he owes you because he borrowed your money. Pressure means in everything in life, trying to stay within a system, not to make people upset. This is in train of thought. I gave it years ago. And I remember I was once in a place where a guy was obviously successful because he didn't like the idea. So clearly, I didn't know who the guy was, but fair assumption that he was a successful person. And he started giving a speech. You don't understand. It's not me showing off. I love my wife, and I could afford to give her $100,000 bracelets. So why shouldn't I? I earned it, and I want to show her my love. And yes, I know, this guy, this stranger told me, I know his face though, I know his name. He was telling me, yes, I know that my brother and his wife have a little issues in their marriage because of it, because my brother and me are not successful in the same level, and she's upset. She, meaning the sister-in-law, is upset when I buy the fancy bracelets. But listen, I'm only talking to me and my wife. And I know my brother knows I love him. And you know what? I help my brother out. I help him. This is what the guy said to me. I give him money. Before a holiday, I drop him a couple $1,000s. Holidays are expensive. I drop him a couple $1,000s. But you know what? Why should I not show my wife the love she deserves? Because his wife's, use words I don't use, starts with a B. And you can guess the words. Just because his wife's like that. So I was trying to explain to this guy, this is what the Torah is telling you. Because in the end, you have an obligation to your brother, not just give him $2,000. But for a holiday, your obligation is to make sure his marriage is well. And when you're showing off the $100,000 bracelet, if you know it causes him marriage problems, then you giving him $2,000 for the holiday might not be enough. But the backlash from the crowd, that's why I still remember it 20 years later, the backlash was...
It's a great point. It's a great message. Pressure.
Great.
So Esther, very strong backlash. Esther in the palace would give pressure to everybody else. If she was revealed as the Jewish queen, perhaps... that would give pressure to everybody else around to live up to a certain level, maybe, or maybe that would affect everybody else around town. They'd have people start looking at them, a little evil eye, maybe.
Not only from the tribes of Yishmael and Esau. Even within the Jews, it could create. They'll say, oh, Mordechai. I remember Mordechai when he was a nobody. I remember Mordechai as a nobody. Now, look at that. He's hanging with the queen. He thinks he's so cool. Which, by the way, what happens at the end of the story? If you remember the last words of the story of Esther, it says Mordechai was liked. What's the last phrase there? Hold on. The Megillah ends by saying, and it's in dark, it's in bold because we repeat that last line. We read English. For Mordechai the Jew, this sounds good. For Mordechai the Jew was viceroy to King Ahasuerus. He was a great man among the Jews, and found favor with English with the multitudes of his brethren. In Hebrew, it reads with most of his brethren. So the question becomes, wait a second, most of his brethren, Mordechai was the one man standing alone, telling everyone, don't put yourself in this situation and going to a meal, because that meal is going to cause us problems. And no one listens to him. Then he's the one guy not standing, not bowing down, and everyone's like, you're causing a lot of problems. But in the end, Mordechai, in 2020 hindsight, was sort of proven correct. So how come not everyone's happy with this? And they quote that Mordechai originally was even higher. He had gone down in the people's eyes. So one of the answers is going to be this. The easy answer. People felt that they were jealous.
Sure enough.
Others say similarly, there's a side answer to the side answer, is that they weren't getting favors out of him. Everyone loves the guy when he knows the queen, when he takes care of my parking ticket. But when he's not taking care of my parking ticket, I'm bummed. But it shows what Chasko was saying is that as you move more toward him becoming popular, it created a certain animosity. So we started the class by one answer saying Esav and Yishmael. Then we're adding on about not putting pressure on people, because you were, Chasko correctly said, the pressure, let's go step by step. The pressure, why did it say Esav and Yishmael? So the Kliyoker said Esav and Yishmael, they're jealous. Chasko said, it doesn't have to do with jealousy because we stole blessings. Your brothers are the ones that are always jealous of you. Esav and Yishmael, automatically, that's what you have to be careful of. This guy far away, you don't care about that guy. They're jealous of your brothers automatically. So I quoted the story with the halacha of don't be a pressurized person. And Chasko now said, I have a new answer. It doesn't mean the brothers only of Yishmael and Esav that they're going to be jealous. No, I'm past that. I'm also telling you, don't have the real brothers within the Judaism saying, I'm jealous of Mordechai and Esther. How come my daughter didn't get chosen? Which would happen by Bixen and Seresh. One of the reasons that they were going to kill the king because their daughter wasn't chosen. So you see, it does create animosity. But what we learn from this is that the Kliyoker says this is a pasuk that in Devarim that speaks in depth to the nations of us today. Not to be great. I once had in this class, I can't remember who it was. Often I asked my father, you remember who told me? That even after the great victory, I don't know if that's the right word, the great, fill in the word, you guys, of Entebbe.
The great raid
on Entebbe, there were some rabbis who were saying, listen, don't be so mindful and show off to the rest of the world. Of course, it's great you save lives. Of course, do that. But be careful not to create this animosity toward the Jewish nation, which is always bubbling directly under the surface. And with that, I wish everyone a Freilich and Purim. Hopefully, we get to at the end of the story of the Esther, which is when we build the next temple.